Hello, Harlina. This is Yarrow here. Just going to go through your questions. Thank you so much for asking them. Number one, you said, Yarrow, welcome to Aha Now. You're a pioneer professional blogging and you have been blogging for almost 10 years. Making money seems to be your second nature. What do you prefer to be known as, a blogger or an entrepreneur, and why? Well, I wouldn't say making money is quite my second nature. I still have to work for it, like all people, Harlina. But to answer your question, I probably, depending on the crowd I go to, I like being an entrepreneur slightly more than being a blogger, but I love being a writer as well. So I often will say I'm a writer entrepreneur. I think I like being an entrepreneur because it means you're not boxed into any one sort of aspect of running a business. You can be starting businesses in all kinds of industries using all kinds of different business models. Where if you're a blogger, you're pretty much looked upon as a person who is a publisher, which is good, but not quite as diverse, and it doesn't have quite as many aspects to it as what an entrepreneur can. But you know what? There isn't an answer to that question. I blog, but I also do a lot of things around the blog to make money, so entrepreneur probably makes a bit more sense. Question two. I read what you wrote about your childhood on your site. The freedom in school subconsciously inspired you, and you subsequently sought for a career that gave you freedom in your work. How supportive were your parents about the career of your choice? Did their separation affect you in any way from pursuing your career? You know, I think a lot of my desire for freedom actually comes from being a bit of a control freak, which is probably a lot of the justification for entrepreneurs to want to have their own business, is just being in control of their hours. That's, for me, a big issue. I hate that feeling of being told to do something and not wanting to do it. If I tell myself to do something and I don't want to do it, but I know it's important to my goals and my business, then I'm more likely to still do it. But I want to have the choice to decide when and where to do that. So, but to answer your question, my parents, there were some times where, certainly early on, first of all, my mother didn't really mind whatever. She was supportive of me sitting on the couch watching TV. I was a very supportive person. Doesn't matter what I was doing, there to help me no matter what I chose to do. She was also more entrepreneurial than my father, so she probably saw that as normal. She has had all kinds of different jobs in her life. Some of them were running her own business, some of them were washing dishes. So she had the whole range of experiences and certainly didn't want me to do anything I didn't want to do. My father, supportive as well. There were some moments I remember quite funny that he would get this kind of I need to be a dad and ask certain question moments where he would say, "Are you sure you should be doing your own business first? Maybe you should get a job and then start a business later once you've had some experience working for someone else's business." And I think he was almost just like saying that because he felt like he should, as a thing that a parent would say to a kid, especially, this is bearing in mind, this is all before I was making any sort of significant money from my own businesses. It's amazing once you actually have some success and you know you're making a living and buying a car and buying a property that suddenly it's obviously you made the right choice and it doesn't really matter so much. But I certainly don't feel that my parents ever hindered my progress. You know, they were always there for places to live if I needed to. So the good thing about that is I didn't have the pressures of rent during the very, very early stages when cash flow is quite small. So, you know, overall, definitely more supportive than anything else. Question three, you asked, there was a time when your mother had gone through tough times and had to endure hardships. That was perhaps also the time when you got your first exposure to the real world of business. What was that a motivator for you to try to earn money and stand on your feet quite early in life? What started the entrepreneurial fire in you? You know, with both my mother and my father, I tended to see more things I didn't want to do than things I did want. In terms of my father, I didn't like the linear aspect of a career. He did. It's more suited to his personality to have had a job, but he also had a side business. So, you know, I could see that different aspects of being an employee for a university, which is what my father was, and then having his own business on weekends. My mother, she had some businesses that required doing things that I did not like getting up very early in the morning to go to a market to sell products at basically like a flea market. And that meant 5 a.m., 4 a.m. starts. And I'm not a morning person, so I was definitely going to avoid any kind of job or business that required early starts. Really, for me though, the motivated to earn money and stand on my own feet was more again about having a freedom of choice and control. Everything is about freedom of choice, and it's funny, it's a bit of dichotomy. You want control, therefore you want freedom. So for me, it was about I want to move out of house and I want to have my own money so I can do that. And there, you know, there might be family reasons for that. There might just be the desire for independence. That's natural motivator for, you know, a person in their late teens or early 20s to want to do. So I was motivated by that. I was really motivated by how much I hated the 9 to 5 idea. I just could not stand the idea of every day getting up and doing a job that was very much restricted on where it could go. You know, you had a career path, you had an income cap, you had a ceiling, and even as you progress and maybe you get raises and reach higher positions in a company, it was completely slow and under the decision making of someone else. You know, it was your bosses, your managers who decided when you advanced, how you advanced, what roles you would take. And I just couldn't stand that. I liked the idea of having complete freedom and control over what I did. So I always was going to find some kind of business, some kind of way to make a living, even if it meant freelancing. And I don't, maybe that's not traditionally a business, it's contracting, but you still get to decide where you do the work and when you do the work. And if you want to do it at 11 o'clock at night instead of 9 o'clock in the morning, then that's your choice. So for me, freelancing was probably the last resort if things didn't work out, or a good stepping stone towards having a business. Question 4. Your family has Ukrainian, Canadian, and Australian background, right? Perhaps you inherited your writing skills from your mother and ability to understand people from your father, who is a psychologist. How important is it for entrepreneurs, bloggers, and internet marketers to understand the psychology of people to be successful? Yes, correct. My father was born in the Ukraine. There's also Czechoslovakian from my mother's side, and she was born in Israel. So for me, though, Canadian and Australian has been the dominant influences growing up in Australia, but speaking with the Canadian accent and having many, many trips to Canada. So those are the two most dominant countries for me. Yes, and certainly writing skills more so from my mother, in the sense that she did a lot more writing and English was her first language. My father, being a university lecturer, is quite a capable writer. In fact, he's a voracious reader. I'm always impressed by how much he reads, yet how terrible his handwriting is. But I think that's just a man thing. We don't have good handwriting. But he's a great, great reader. And both my parents were in the field of counseling, psychology, social work. So there's very, very strong empathy and, you know, human psychology aspects to my parents. Definitely some genetics there. I probably didn't find their careers interesting in that sort of aspect. Like, I had no desire to be a counselor or a therapist in any shape or form. But marketing is very similar. It's a social science as well. So it just happens to be more tied to money. You're asking me, so how important is it for entrepreneurs, bloggers, and internet marketers to understand psychology of people? So yes, that's basically my answer. Marketing is a social science. It means you're looking to understand why people make decisions, and that, you know, you're tying it into a buying decision, obviously, since you're trying to sell products and services, but ultimately the motivations are the same. Everything is from the same root place, the desire for food, safety, power, status, significance, relationships, all those things drive all the decisions we make, whether to buy something or anything we do in life. So yes, absolutely critical aspect of being a marketer is understanding people. Question 5. You've told your success story probably many times to people about how you rose from being a plebeian to becoming a pioneer. Though my blog readers can always visit your blog and read your business timeline for detailed information, I'd like to know, what are the things you did differently that other bloggers don't do? And what do we miss out on to become a Yarrow? What do we miss out on to become a Yarrow? Okay. Well, the primary difference I noticed between myself and the other bloggers at the time I was growing up in the blogosphere was my strong leaning towards internet marketing techniques. I was very much mixing internet marketing with blogging, where certainly the majority of bloggers at the time were not. And by that I mean I was having an email list. I had an email list. I was doing offers through my list. I was combining the blog to get people onto the list, giving people a lead resource, you know, to build relationships and promote a product. And that was something that most bloggers didn't do. It's still something that most bloggers don't do. The idea of advertising and affiliate income is often the common path. And for internet marketers, it's not usually the first thing they do. They usually go straight to selling a product or a service and trying to get a higher response rate. And they're very good at doing direct response. Bloggers are terrible at doing direct response. They're often terrible at making offers. They just want to write content and hopefully make enough money from advertising, which maybe back in the day was a realistic goal, but you know, it's so competitive now and you need so much traffic in order to make a full-time living from advertising that I would actually argue you should almost always be going some kind of direct response model, selling a product or a service if you're serious about making a full-time income from blogging, because there's just no way to get leverage without doing that. You need to be making offers. So that's one aspect. In terms of what you miss out on to follow my path is, you know, there is a need to focus on selling sometimes, and that's not something people, bloggers like. So I guess you miss out on the potentially simple formula of just writing blog posts and then hoping you make enough traffic to make enough money from advertising and affiliate income. Unfortunately, that's probably not something that you will achieve, because like I said, very, very few blogs ever get the kind of traffic volume they need to make money just from advertising and just from affiliate marketing. So I don't know. I don't think you can miss out on anything that's too important. You probably miss out on things that are not as good, like long hours writing tons and tons of content you give away for free, where if you do what I do, you can still write and have a connection with your audience, but most of your money time is spent creating content for paying members who really value what you do. So, you know, different philosophies, and whether you see something as missing out or not missing out is a bit subjective, so I'm not sure I can answer that part very well. Question 6, how important is it to have a blog community or a loyal blog audience? Was it in any way instrumental in pushing you towards success? Well, community is more and more important, and it has become more and more important over the years. I mean, you know, when I started blogging, people didn't talk about community quite as overtly as they do today. Back then, it was just what you did. You had a blog, you had people reading it, and you had people becoming fans and leaving comments. That's just a natural, organic process of growing a blog. So, yeah, that's a community. Today, though, people are much more focused on that aspect of building a presence online. So, you know, needing a community, needing a tribe, needing a core group of loyal followers is absolutely vital. In fact, I don't think you can actually have a successful business based on a blog, or really most businesses, without some sort of community aspect, even if it's just some kind of loyalty program if you're selling products and services. It's always something you do to connect the people who are involved with what you do. In terms of blogging, though, I do think you have to be careful, because a lot of bloggers will spend time fostering community, fostering engagement, and then all they end up doing is have a rabid following of people who love what they do and just want more and more free stuff from you. And the minute you then go and say, hi, I now am going to charge you for some of my content, it's a complete pattern interrupt in the wrong way. It's like, wait a sec, you've been giving all this great stuff for free, but now you want me to pay for something that you gave away for free previously? I'm upset. And then not only will they not buy what you're offering, they actually will be angry at you and potentially, you know, write things against you on your own blog in comments and potentially backlash and stop reading you altogether. So I would argue that where you should spend your time building community is twofold now. It's obviously doing some sort of community building around the blog, but really spend your time fostering the community around the people who pay for your products and services. I wrote about this recently. The most important relationship you want to nurture with a blog is your customer relationship. It's not your free reader. It's not the person who leaves a comment but never actually buys anything from you. Spend your time focusing on the people that support you financially and value your time by being willing to pay for it. That's way more important than just feeling good because you have an army of people who just want all your free stuff. Unless, of course, you're doing it for a hobby, which probably means you shouldn't listen to what I'm talking about. Well, you can, but you just won't like the stuff I talk about when it comes to making money. So question 7, what should bloggers do to have a supporting community, and can we still have an engaging blog community if we shift our conversations to the social media platforms? You know, going back on my previous question, you can do as much as you want with community. You can engage them on your blog, you can engage them in social media. Bloggers out there will tell you that this is the most important thing to do, is to build this tribe around what you're doing and meet them where they are on all the different platforms. But like I said, at the end of the day, if you're spending all your time just talking to people, but you're not making any money and you want to make money, then you need to start thinking more about customer relationships and less about freebie relationships. That's a personal point of view. Some people will argue that if you focus on freebie relationships, the people who want to buy from you will find you and buy from you. But unfortunately, what I find for most people is for that to happen, you need an absolutely massive amount of people following you, and most bloggers will never reach those numbers. You won't make a full-time income because you'll only have one person out of every thousand buy something from you. So that to that for that to work, you need 10, 20, 30, 40, 50,000 people following you, and most bloggers never reach that point. Most bloggers, if they're lucky, get to 1,000 people at best, and that's sort of like a goal. However, if you have a thousand people and you actually manage to get 100 of them to buy from you and spend $1,000 a year with you, then you're making 100,000 a year. So if you shift your focus a little bit away from just supporting community for the sake of it to supporting people who support you by buying products and services, it's just a much better use of your time. And that can be in social media platforms too, but focus on customers first. Question eight, you need to be a bit extrovert to be social. You need to be a bit extroverted, maybe, to be social. There was a time when you lacked confidence and were a little shy in your initial years. How did you develop self-confidence and become a successful professional blogger? And how did you change your mindset and gain self-esteem? I'm still very introverted. You don't need to be an extrovert to be at least have an outgoing presence on the internet. You can, be a contributor without needing to be extroverted. For me, a lot of, and I think everyone will agree with this, self-esteem and confidence comes from experience and doing things, having achievements, getting results, making an impact. You will always get more confidence from doing that. So the most important thing is to make sure you're always doing something, and that way you're building the experiences. You can also work on your mindset. I became very aware of my own self-thinking patterns, so my inner dialogue. Did a little bit of analysis of how I talk to myself and tried to reframe a lot of things away from negative to positive aspects. And it's something you have to keep working on over time, and it takes a while, but as you get better at it, it starts to have a positive impact on everything you do. Because if you're your own support team, then more likely will you succeed because you're, positive, you're happy about your results, rather than saying negative things to yourself, like you never get anywhere, no one pays attention to your work, why are you wasting your time? That doesn't help you. So you need to make sure you're on your own team to begin with. But like I said, though, you can be really shy on the internet and still be a successful blogger. And the great thing about it is you can just write words. You don't have to do video. You don't have to do audio. There's a very well-known email marketer named Andre Chaperon, who has a massive following, who has been influential in the internet marketing space for longer than I've been doing this, over 10 years. And he is very, very introverted. He's never does webinars. He never does video. He never does podcasts. He's only ever once spoken on stage, and that was just recently after more than 10 years of being a marketer. He just writes words. So you can be comfortable in your shyness, writing words, and have a successful business and have a successful blog. So, don't let that be something that stop you. But, obviously, if these are parts of your personality you want to improve, then you should do it. You should do video, you should do audio, because that will give you confidence. I know for me, when I started my podcast, which was, very, very early, I started my podcast after 6 months of blogging back in 2005. It was a little bit like public speaking, and I hadn't done much of it. So that helped me. Even though there was no one there, I felt a little bit nervous because I felt like I was talking to people like I'm doing right now. But I don't feel nervous now. But when I just started, I would have. This is probably the 1,000th plus time I've spoken on a something like an interview or a podcast. So practice certainly gets you more confident. Question nine. Times have changed since you started blogging. Today, bloggers face many challenges with the tough competition going on. How should they change their blogging strategy to remain competitive and excel in making money online? Well, that pretty much ties into what I was talking about before, about first of all, focusing on nurturing customer relationships and not just freebie seekers and not just engaging with people for the sake of engaging, doing it as a business and having that mindset. I think you need to have a much more specific target market, target audience, a niche within a niche in order to be a specialist, because that's something that really helps when you're in a competitive space, when you reach a saturation point in the marketplace. The only way to succeed is to separate yourself by becoming more specific about some aspect of an industry. So you go from being a blogging professional to being a professional blogger who focuses only on an aspect of blogging. For example, maybe you just help women bloggers, and then you say, I only help stay-at-home mom bloggers, and then you say, I only help stay-at-home mom bloggers who have two children. And you can go as far as you want with this. You can always bring it down, usually by niching down on the target audience you go for. That's where the niching happens, because that's the best way to segment. Once you know who you're talking to, it's much easier to market to them, to find them, and that's how you can have a successful business. Plus, of course, you're going to sound like a much better solution to their problem if you say exactly the things that they are. So if I tell you I help bloggers who like only to write to make money by selling a course that they create themselves, then people are going to be interested in what I teach if they are also a writer who wants to sell a course. If they're a podcaster who wants to do an audio program, then they probably won't pay attention to me. So it's kind of good because it discards the irrelevant people and attracts the small tribe that you need. So that's definitely the way I would go about dealing with the competitive landscape. The other aspect to this is realizing that you won't make a living with a small niche if you're just going after advertising and affiliate income. And in fact, you probably won't make it just selling one ebook or one course either. You're going to need to have a marketing funnel with a range of products so that you get some people coming to you for the more lower price products you offer, and then a segment of them coming to you for the group coaching or some sort of experience with you, maybe workshops in person or live webinars, and then a very small segment of those people willing to spend $10,000 a year to have private coaching with you or to spend time at a personal retreat or, you know, buy your highest level product or service. So it's always a segment of a segment of a segment, increasing the amount that they pay. And you make money, or you make the majority of your money, the further along in that marketing funnel you go. If you want to make the six-figure level income, you're going to need to have the $1,000 plus products in most spaces. Obviously, I'm talking about information marketing here. If you're an e-commerce seller and you're selling your own products and services, it's a different strategy. It's not my angle, hence I don't teach it. And that's, again, me segmenting my audience. So you should probably go study someone else if you have an e-commerce store. Question 10, I hear various versions of your income story, but I'd like to hear it directly from you if you wish to reveal. How much money do you make and how do you do it? Well, you probably hear various stories because it's changed so many times over the years, but I always write about it and I always talk about it on interviews. So at one stage I was making, like I had a card game website and I had a trading forum in there, which I made money from advertising and selling cards. Then I had a proofreading business, which I made money from basically selling proofreading services to university students. And I was a middleman. I would find the proofreaders and hire them and connect them with the students and take a cut from that. I called that business model services arbitrage. And then I started blogging. And initially I did do advertising and affiliate income with my blogging. I eventually launched a training program and that significantly increased my income. And then I also started to buy and sell some websites too. So I bought some blogs, sold some blogs, bought some forums about miniature motorcycles and started to set up some passive income streams from buying and selling websites. Eventually though, I sold out of all those assets to focus only on my blog teaching business. And then I actually closed down all my teaching programs as well because they were getting dated. That was a couple of years ago, and focused my time for a couple of years on a startup called Cranky Ads about advertising for blogs, which eventually was shut down after 2 years when it was clear it wasn't going to work, at least coming from Australia. I need to go to somewhere and get some funding, basically, and that wasn't something I was looking to do. And then just recently, as I'm talking to you, I am back into the information marketing world. So to be honest, I shouldn't really say what the exact income I have right now because it's not really indicative of what I'm doing at the moment, which is relaunching my courses. At the moment, all I'm selling is some low-end, my front-end products, my more affordable products that are in the sort of $30 to $50 range, and just setting up my my new coaching program, which a few people are in at the moment, my EJ Insider program. And then next I'll relaunch my blog mastermind training program and a few other of my courses, and they're more the $1,000 sort of range products. So my income is actually quite low compared to the best years. My best years, I was making $500,000 a year, but that's when all my courses were available. Now I'm recreating them. So there's this period of less income while I go back and update them, relaunch them. And most importantly, I'm coming up with a different model. I'm not teaching the same thing I taught with those courses 5 years ago because things have changed. So, you know, I make a living at the moment primarily from a bit of residual affiliate income from the money that's starting to come in from my initial training products. And it's just increasing each month as I slowly create more products, I tweak the marketing processes and, you know, increase conversion. But that's probably the best thing for me to say because it's so transient right now. And I've been spending a bit of money too, because it's a lot of technology to set up, a lot of outsourcing to do. So yes, very much a new period for my business.